Okay.
Okay. So years after she was caught and she was put in jail. In fact, we were already in the United States when my brother-in-law showed me an article in the paper that Ilse Koch, that was her name, was caught, and for how many years she was a fugitive. And when I told them, that was the very few times that I spoke about the lager, when I told them what happened with Ilse Koch and me, so, and then, we were in cellar, okay?
Can you spell that?
Yes, capital C, E, L, L, E.
It's in Germany.
Cellar? I think it's German.
Near Hanover?
Yes.
Okay.
It's, wait a minute, Hanover or Hamburg? Hanover or Hamburg? I'm not good on remembering this.
Well, the name is, it's on the map, I'm sure.
Oh, God. I think it was Hanover. So one day we were in cellar. And that day I went back to Bergen-Belsen. But we were already liberated. It was cellar, yes. A group of people. Are coming from Prague, Czechoslovakia, looking for Czech people, Czech Jews, with drugs, that they want to take them home. And we started inquiring, and we heard that there is a group of Romanian guys who was sent by the Romanian government to look for the displaced persons. But we didn't know who they are and we never inquired about it. So a few guys from my hometown got together and organized a group to be taken home through Prague to go back. And they found out that we were, the two of us, were in cellar. So they came in governs. And that morning, one of the guys, two lawyers got together and organized this group, two lawyers from back home, from Romania, from my hometown. And at that morning, when they came to pick us up, one of the guys says, you know, there is a rumor going that in Prague, there are a few guys from Kolozsvár who are sent by the Romanian government to pick up displaced persons. So when we get to Prague, we will try and look them up. And they came to pick us up, and we were about 80 or 100 people that we are going home. And we stopped at Prague. A railway station, which is a tremendous, tremendous big place. But these two guys organized, so we had one of them train, part of the train, just for us, nobody else. And we get into Prague railway station, and it was sort of getting dark already. And my sister, you know, by that time we had a few pieces of clothing made from blankets and shoes, and darling, I thought I'm the best dressed girl, clean clothes. So we fixed each other on the floor for the night. And all of a sudden, I hear our name be called. My maiden name was Diamondstein. And I hear somebody calling Diamondstein Clara and Irene and Clara and Irene. And I said to my sister, somebody's calling our name. And my sister says, you and your dreams. I said, well, the first dream came through. will hear our names. But it was dark already. And all of a sudden, the door opens to the wagon, and there stands my husband, who was my fiancé before, and another guy, and he says, Clara, Irene, Dan Bela is here. And when I heard his name, I passed out. And all I know is that I woke up. When I woke up, I was already in their place, in this place, which was the Czech consulate, which the Romanian, these Romanian guys lived in, sent by the Romanian government. And they were the guys who were supposed to come to Celle to look for displaced persons.
Your husband was one of them.
One of them. But he would have never found my name because he looked between the Romanians. But my sister put us between the Czechs because they were the first ones to get out. And she really didn't care where she puts our name, as long as we can get out. So the rest of the group went further, and we stayed with my husband. And then we went home. Then I found out that my aunt is home and my two cousins. And we went home and we got married and we came back to Munich, Germany, because my husband wanted to come out to the States.
So you came back to Germany right after you went home?
We stayed home 6 weeks.
So 45 you were already back?
46 was my wedding, 45 December,
mm-hmm.
And 46 January we came to Prague, back to Prague, because we left the guys there, and from these friends, and from Prague we went over to Munich, because we wanted to emigrate, and you couldn't do it from
mm-hmm.
Prague. So we stayed in Munich for 4 years.
And you came here, so that would be almost
49
you came?
49 May.
To Detroit?
To Detroit.
And he had brothers here already?
Yes, he had two brothers here, and we came to Boston at the friend of ours. One of the guys he was working with went to Boston, and the other one went to Hawaii, and the fourth one died.
You said before at the very beginning that you heard your brother was still alive in Siberia?
Yeah, in labor camp.
What happened?
Russia.
Did he ever get out?
Yes. See, my husband was my husband was in labor camp too, and after he got out, I really don't know exactly when he got out. I'm sorry he isn't home.
He would like to be interviewed also, I understand.
Oh, he doesn't mind. In fact, he gave some very valuable pictures from the concentration camp to, what's her name, Mark Eichner's wife.
Margaret Eichner. Margaret.
Do you girls work together?
I know her very well.
Well, he gave her an album. And I want that back. I don't want it forgotten. And those are original pictures from camp. From concentration camps.
That's very valuable.
So, my husband was very, very active in this. And I think there were three or four guys working together. They were between the first ones to come home and being liberated, or I think that they ran away from the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
And a few of them got together and with their own money, that's what they did. They were in Poland were in Auschwitz getting people out. In fact, some of the pictures, you will see the wagons, the trains. And he worked for quite a few years.
So he's the one that knew that your brother was still alive?
He found out that my brother and one of his brother-in-law were in some kind of a jail or labor camp. And through the different channels and was bribery. He was always a step late. And he talked to my brother. He met my brother. I really wouldn't like to talk about it because I am not sure, so I don't want to contradict his story with my story. I remember we were already in Germany and getting ready to come to wait. And my sister was left in Romania because we went back together. When we heard that my brother is alive, okay, and we begged my sister to come to Germany to immigrate with us. But my sister wrote that she couldn't do that because my brother, when he left, was taken into forced labor camp, left my mother home, left his family home, wife. The little boy, he didn't even know his second child because my sister-in-law, may she rest in peace, was pregnant, was in, I think, in her 7th month was their second child. So she felt that he wouldn't be able to cope with the situation on being left alone, coming home and not finding anybody. So that's why I'm not with my sister, because she stayed home and then she got married. And in the meantime, my brother came back and he remarried the second time and they went out to Israel. My brother lived in Israel when it was Palestine.
Mm-hmm. Before 48?
Oh, yes. He lived in Israel when between 34 or 33 and 37.
Oh, really? And then he came home?
And then he came home because my father was very sick and his wish was that his only son. In fact, when my father died, when my brother came home, brought little bags. They call it some kind of sand, what religious people put in the casket. And my brother brought a few of them, so one of the bags were put in my father's casket. And my brother remarried. And then my sister and brother-in-law with the daughter went out to Israel when the situation started really getting, when they just had to get out because both of them were music teachers, my brother-in-law too, while he lived. And they taught in school and privately, but the situation, they wanted to force them in the Communist Party and they didn't want it. So things got real rough.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able, of course they had to leave everything there. All they could take out, they shipped out, I think, one or two of their Steinways, the piano, but
mm-hmm.
really nothing to talk about the rest of them. And my brother went out after that. And in the meantime, I lost my brother, and my sister lost her husband. The rest of the question I'll look up to you.
And you have one daughter?
Yes.
And she's called?
Shirley is 30.
And
she's married. She has 2 children.
And they're How old?
Lori is 4 and Amy is 29. And she went a few times to the survivor, Holocaust survivor of children of the Holocaust. She has a friend who went to, her name was Shelley, I don't know, they're New Yorkers. And both of them went. But then she found that, I don't know, she just didn't find what she was looking.
Does she, have you told her about your experiences?
Oh, absolutely. But to make an issue about it, never did.
Just telling her?
Telling her. I have the book Myla 18, and I have a few books about this. And we took and we made up with our minds when we came out that we can close the past because that will be always. But whenever Shirley, I just didn't like the attitude at the beginning. You know, when they told us not once and not twice, because you are in the concentration camp, America doesn't owe you a living. And then when they used to call me greenhorns, okay, and I just,
are you talking about American Jews?
Yes.
Just Americans in general?
No, American Jews. American Jews.
You felt that they...
I just felt that I don't want their pity. I don't want their pity, and that I don't want their snobbishness.
I've heard that before.
And...
So most of your friends, do you stay mostly with your friends from...
We have mixed crowds.
You don't just have friends from Europe?
Oh no. In fact, we always try to mix. But not so much now, okay? But at the beginning, I still say that the biggest part, you know, when they made us the remark, what do you want? You have everything. You have relatives to come with us. But when we came out to this country, we had to work for everything. Okay? And once I got so angry that I told somebody, I asked them if they really came out with the Mayflower by any chances. And that's why we were really very hesitant on talking about it. And Shirley knew everything, and we had open discussions, but to make an issue, not to tell Shirley, now listen, you sit down, and I'm going to tell you, and because I am a newcomer, or I suffered the suffering, how much I suffered, and how easy it is for you kids, but I suffered, never. In fact, I always told Shirley that I hope that you will get from your father and your mother just a little bit of the love and understanding and level-headedness as much as we got from our past. All I can tell you that I was told so many times, you went through concentration camp, you haven't got a kosher kitchen. How come? I said, because in my eye, if they did what they did to my husband's family, to my husband's mother, who was so deeply religious and a good soul, his sisters. And my parents were so good. Okay, I didn't lose my parents in the concentration camp. But I felt, I was engaged to my husband before. And he was very religious. And it would have been a normal thing for me to have a kosher house. Not to put a light on Shabbos. Not to cook on Shabbos. Because that was a natural thing back home. But here I feel that I am just as good of a Jew because I don't have kosher kitchen as the one who has and beats her head against the wall, so to say. And my own daughter has a kosher house. But when a holiday she went to the United Hebrew Synagogue, she went to shul since she was 3 years old. In fact, I was one of the organizers at the PTO in shul. I was very active in shul. And I feel that Shirley knows enough about the Holocaust and everything what happened without making her sit down and listen to this or listen to that.
When you think back on everything, do you have any feeling or thought as to why you survived? I mean, was it fate or some reason you survived?
I consider myself most of the time. Sometimes when I see so many injustice done, and again the anti-Semitism, and again the corruption, and again Jews can get here or there, I really wonder if it was worth the whole thing. I just hope and pray that the younger generation, and I'm not talking about your generation, I'm considering you between my Shirley's generation.
Our children.
Your children. You kids will have the strength and what word should I use to recognize? To recognize when the evil, before the evil really gets to you. Because right now it's again hell. But as long as we have our little Israel. But I still believe as long as religion is a problem, it will always be anti-Semitism. Always, always will be. Now this is me personally, okay? I'm a very, very strong faith girl. I do believe in God. I would do anything for humanity. I'll do anything for anybody. It can be any religion. To me it wouldn't matter. We had, for instance, going back to Germany, we had in Munich a dear friend. We lived together with a friend of ours who was a doctor, Jewish guy. And he worked in hospital. He was a graduate of German medical school. And a Jewish guy. And he had German friends, doctors. We had them. They were very nice people. We celebrated Christmas in their house. We were invited to their house for Christmas dinner. And in fact, this doctor, this German doctor, his name was Yelko, used to tell us that he sometimes when he gets called in the country, people don't have money to pay. So they bring eggs or whatever they have from the farm. So my husband told him, how can you make a living? Do you sell the eggs or chicken or what? How do you make a living? So he says, well, why don't you come one day when I go out and make my house calls with me? Now this was a German Munich born guy, okay? And my husband went with him on a house call and in the country, and they started talking, and one of the young girl, my husband wanted to know how her thinking is. Now this goes back 32, we are here 32 years, so probably it must be 34 years, okay? This girl from the country, my husband asked the girl if she likes her place. She said sure, and if she goes into Munich sometimes or in a bigger city. She said really and truly she would love to go, but she understands that there are Jewish people there. So my husband said, what do you mean? They didn't know that he's Jewish. And Yelko was there, the friend was there. And my husband says, what do you mean Jewish people? What do you think that they are or how? So she said, well, you know, I heard that they are really bad people, ugly people, monsters, mean, and very dangerous. So my husband looked at her, and he really was a very handsome guy, my husband. He looked at her and he told her, would you be surprised if I would tell you that I am Jewish? The girl started running, and the rest of the family stayed there. And they called the gruber, come on back, come on back. So she came back and the mother looked at my husband and she said, you mean to tell me that they are human beings? So my husband said, well, you see, I have two hands, two feet. I didn't even touch you. I didn't bite you. I'm a friend of your doctor. That's how uneducated, stupid, that's where the Nazism and the anti-Semitism did what it did.
So it started people like that.
But regrets? I hope and pray that nothing happens to my children and grandchildren and to you young people. And I hope if something like this would ever happen again, if I'm still alive, I would have the guts to take a gun, because I couldn't afford it. I really couldn't. I have to tell you one more remark. There are very many newcomers like me. Who want to play the big shots, okay? Like, they are bigger Americans than the American people themselves. They play the big humanitarian Americans better than the American people themselves. I don't know whether you understand it.
I can think of a few people you might be referring to.
Pardon?
I can think of some people.
Okay. You will find very few people come from Europe who will tell you that they were poor or working people. Or just middle-class people. Or, for that matter, some of them are really educated people. And those people, when they get in touch with the old comers, you know, I'm talking about 40, 50, when they left Poland and all the places and they used the buggy, the horse and buggy, mm-hmm. cannot imagine that as much as America changed and advanced, that's how much those places changed. For instance, when we got here, somebody told me, now listen, we have to take you across the border to Canada. You have to see that, whatchamacallit, under the tunnel. You have to see how our tunnel looks. And somebody told me, oh, we have to take you down to see the Fox Theater because it's so beautiful. That never in your life, just in America, can you see this. So we went and saw the Fox Theater, and by that time, you know, we used to travel in our days. And we told these people, now listen, the Fox Theater is really beautiful, absolutely beautiful. But you have to go and see in Germany, Salzburg, then you will see, even though that they are German, but that you have to give them credit, because what they can show you, the beauty. Foxes, see, that is a beautiful, but go and see that. You will find out, you will find Fox theaters over there too. Maybe in your times they didn't have anything like that. But golly, America didn't have at that time either what they have. So it was very hard at the beginning to make a new life. Oh God, we wanted to go back so many times. And it was really, really, very, very hard. Quite a few people tell us that we are more Americanized than some of them. Really, we are not more Americanized if you understand or if you know what I mean by it. We just knew that this is our new life. This is what we have to get used to it. And we have to assimilate ourselves and get used to the way American life is. And really, that's when Shirley tells me, well, you will move to Florida. It's really not so easy to make again, like my family wanted us to go to Israel, or when my sister got out of Israel. It was so natural. We wrote them and asked them for the date so we should send them affidavits. And my sister wrote us, they have an only child, wrote us that this is our home and nobody is going to call my daughter the dirty Jew. You are not home. That is not your land. And the day will come when you will be called a dirty Jew again. And we cope, we will cope with the Arabs either easier and better, and you will cope with the black problem, or then America will cope with the black problem. So So, I don't know. Maybe Israel would have been the place. Who knows?
You make your choices at the time, or you have to decide at the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And later it doesn't
matter. I love Israel. But I would have to be forced out from here, okay, to make a move. And I love Israel, my family is there. So, this is my home, and no place on earth people had the opportunity to live as they have lived. It's not easy, and it wasn't easy, but you take the good with the bad.
Yeah.
So, what other question you have? Somebody asked me
if you wanted
if to guess, if I want to guess the American birth when I got here, and I told them no, I didn't. But when I went to Israel, I felt like guessing it, and they didn't like it because they said that we are very ungrateful. We displaced persons, because if not for Truman, we would have rotten in Germany.
This was an American-born Jew?
Yes. The American Jew has to be educated before the generation, before the new generation can cope with this problem. Those people, the parents, have to be educated too, because between the remarks said, you mean the concentration camp was suffering? Have you got any idea what the depression was? I said, no, I really don't know what the depression was. She said, well, then don't complain about the concentration camp, because you don't know how bad the depression was. I wanted this to be on the tape.
The American Jews think more like Americans than Jews sometimes. Is that what you think?
Well,
they forget about, I mean, they want to be so patriotic.
The American Jews, as I told you, they will never let you forget that Israel is living with their money. Okay? They suffered to bring you over. They suffered because the depression was. So, I didn't say all of them, okay? But they are pretty big percentage uneducated, stupid, and they think that with the money they conquer the whole world and everybody. Because they have money, you dance. Well, there are so many Jews without money. I was much more than those at the beginning. But they don't have the opportunity.
Okay.
This was this little Gentile Polish guy. Somehow I got befriended with him. And brought me garlic.
This was an Auschwitz?
Yes, fresh garlic. And I had my aunt. And poor old woman. She really was so well to do at home, and every comfort and everything, and here she was a sick person, and we couldn't give her anything just to make her a little comfortable. So this old man brought me a piece of fresh garlic. And I said to her, "Oh my God, I'm so grateful. At least we will have a delicious supper tonight, because on the bread we will smear some garlic. But you know, we are five of us, and my aunt is here, who's her daughter, and we will just have to divide in a few from they share the bread with. That means that one garlic will have to be enough for 10 slices of bread, because one loaf was divided in five." And I said to this man, "And my portion and my sister's, my sister, even though she's in here, but I'm talking for her, it will go to our aunt, so she really should feel the taste of the garlic." So the old man says, "Well, how late will you be here? Because my sister and myself used to be door watchers." I didn't even tell you this. In our barrack. And it was up to us who went to the bathroom and who didn't. So we used to get beaten up so often, because most of our barracks were from our hometown. My hometown, my husband's hometown, and another one I mentioned, Neubauer. So cool people with diarrhea, tell them you can't go out. And whoever was caught by the SS people was asked, "Which block are you from?" So there we came, there they came, and we got a few good lessons. So this, I told the man, "I don't know, after the chalapel. I don't know what time it is." So he says, "You know what, if I don't get back today, I will be back tomorrow." And I told the old man that I really can't even believe you. You are gentle, aren't you? Now why would you come back? But this guy put a lovable love. And he was a gentle, okay? So he says, "Now just don't you worry. I'll be back. If you don't eat garlic today, you will be eating garlic tomorrow." And hope below, we didn't see the old man for a few days. And what that big feast was for my aunt, but of course everybody had a little bit, okay, so it was divided for 10 slices of bread. And about a week after, we will know what time was that. And it was about a week or so, the old man shows up. I says, "What did I tell you? That I am a Jew, you are Gentile." He said, "Like hell, Roosevelt died." So the president was Roosevelt that year. What month did Roosevelt die?
May, I think. It was in the spring, I think.
Comes back, Roosevelt died. And I started crying. I said, "Oh my God, Roosevelt died, that's the end of us. Where did you hear it?" He said, "We saw a newspaper." And they knew about the concentration camp. And Roosevelt was a big Jew hater, a big anti-Semitic person.
This man said this?
Huh?